Red Eye is a program of alternative politics and culture which broadcasts live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM and around the world at cooperadio.org. I'm Jane Williams. Last month, Simon Fraser University released its second interprovincial report card on language and settlement services. The study compares services for immigrants in each province in Canada. The study says that the federal government is failing to support immigrants adequately in their settlement process. This, they say, is particularly alarming in view of the government's intention to increase the number of immigrants to 1% of Canada's population. Add to that the fact that within 6 years, immigrants are expected to account for all net labor growth. And within another 20 years, immigrants will account for all of Canada's population growth. Jennifer Hindman was one of the lead researchers on the report. I spoke with her yesterday, and I began by asking her what kind of services the government provides for immigrants.
The study looked at two kinds of services for immigrants and refugees here in BC and also across the country. Essentially, language services, that is official language, French or English services for people who don't have those skills, and also settlement services.
And what do you mean when you say settlement services?
Well, when people first arrive in Canada, or one part of Canada, they often need just basic tacit knowledge that most of us take for granted. How to find a place to live, what kinds of identification you require in order to get a bank account, in order to get money for the down payment on the place to live. And literally the very logistical, but also some of the tacit knowledge that allows you to fully participate in Canadian society.
Now, you gave BC a failing grade in your comparison across the country. BC came out very badly. And in fact, I believe we're the worst in the country in terms of language training. Why is that? What factors went into creating that failing grade?
Well, essentially what this report card did, you can imagine a map of Canada where every province gets a grade and is a different color based on that grade. So yes, BC is bright red, to bring your attention to the fact that per person, BC is spending the least per immigrant landing on language services for those who need them. So what it means is that while in Ontario, a person arrives and has very little in the way of English language skills, they will get up to level 5 of ELSA. ELSA just simply stands for English language services for adults. So in Ontario, it's level 5. In BC, it's level 3.
And what does level 5 mean?
Well, level 5 is obviously better than level 3, but it's not even job-ready English. You go to Newfoundland and you get higher levels still. You get, I understand, level 8 in Newfoundland, and that allows you to be job-ready. So that when you talk about full participation in Canada, obviously getting a job and fully participating in employment is part of what the Canadian government and I think Canadian society hopes for.
So if we're talking about a level 3 in BC, we're talking about less than half of the way to job ready?
Exactly.
You say it's underfunded, and one of the areas is that they only get a certain level of English. Are there other areas of the language training in which we don't measure up as well as other provinces?
Well, actually, I didn't say we were underfunded because, in fact, the federal government transfers something in the order of $36 million a year to the province of British Columbia through what's called the Canada-BC Agreement, a federal-provincial agreement to basically provide language training in terms of that particular dimension. However, the provincial government has decided to only spend about half of that directly on language services and put the rest into general consolidated revenue. So not all the money allocated for language services is actually getting to the new immigrants and refugees arriving in BC.
So if I was studying English or French in one of the other provinces which has a better, more complete system, what would I be getting there that I don't get in BC?
Well, I'm not an instructor of English as a second language, but certainly in BC you would be getting what some people might call, 911 English, emergency English, enough to go shopping, to say hello to someone, to carry on a fairly superficial conversation, but not enough, for example, to fully participate at your child's, say you're going to a parent-teacher night and you have a concern about something happening in your child's classroom, not enough English that you could actually feel comfortable or even able to express what that might be.
And is there a limit to the number of hours in BC?
There is tacitly a limit because basically when you arrive here, you wait at least 6 months to even get into an English class. So you wait even longer if you have children because you need childcare while you're in English classes. So in a sense, yes, there is a limit. Once you hit level three, basically you're on your own. You have to pay for it. And this is all the more upsetting, really, because when an immigrant arrives in the country, and this doesn't include refugees, they pay $975 in what's called a right of landing fee. And that's a way to prepay for services that they're going to draw upon once they, you know, settle. And so therefore, settlement services are in fact kind of prepaid by immigrants themselves. So the idea that this money then transferred from the federal government to the province is not fully going to the services that it's intended to go for or to be allocated for is all the more upsetting because people are not going to get the jobs they want. And some of the policy implications from a more sort of arm's length point of view are, will new immigrants to BC realize that the services here are poorer and move off to Manitoba or Ontario? Another question is, will unemployment rates here be higher among new immigrants because they don't have the English skills to get better jobs or to get the jobs, you know, that they're qualified to do?
Now, the programs are funded federally. Why are they so different across the country?
Well, in fact, the Citizenship and Immigration, the ministry principally responsible for settlement and integration, which is a government word for full participation, actually has a formula and has a fairly systematic, you know, amount per landing of for each immigrant. So those dollars are divvied up based on landings to BC. What happens then is how they are spent at the provincial levels. And obviously, that's where the discretion and the what we call the uneven geography of service distribution occurs.
And how does the province justify that it doesn't spend all the money that it gets?
I don't know that they have a very good answer for it. Their answer is something like, well, immigrants draw on services other than language services and settlement services, so therefore we need to put some of the money into consolidated revenue. Now that's true, but a lot of these immigrants are also working and paying taxes into the tax system that pays for, you know, schooling and healthcare and so on. So in a way they're kind of being doubly taxed at first when they land, and then like everyone else they're basically paying into the tax system. Not always at the same level, but they are.
Now, I understand, as you alluded to just now, that immigrants pay money when they first come in. It's almost $1,000, $975, when they become permanent residents. Does the government spend overall that much money on providing services?
They actually collect a little bit more than they pay out. They also charge administrative fees that cover administrative processing. But at the end of the day, it's very difficult to know exactly what the cost of infrastructure is. But in terms of actual transfers, the transfers are not quite equivalent to, but in the ballpark figure of what they collect from immigrants when they arrive.
So the idea that some people have that immigrants get free English and all this free help is actually just not correct.
That's right. It's incorrect. And actually, when they first implemented this, the right of landing fee, $975, refugees as well had to pay. But that was seen to be a bit problematic for a number of reasons. First of all, no other country in the world did it. And if you take a careful look at the conditions from which refugees are coming, often from camps where they've been often for a decade or more, their resource base is so slim. And their reasons for coming here so qualitatively different that the government finally relented on that and decided to lift it.
Now, the government says that it wants to support immigrants to live outside of the three big cities, and that would be Vancouver, Montreal, and Toronto. Do its policies actually support that goal?
That's a very interesting question. What we don't exactly know is what the level of needs for immigrants are in those smaller areas. What we do know is that services for immigrants in smaller communities are fairly modest and becoming ever more modest given the new funding mechanisms, particularly in BC, where we've just seen an incredible concentration of services in the cities and, if not intentional, a virtual neglect of rural areas and peri-urban or second-tier cities, if you like, in the BC region. So right now, this idea of regionalization and spreading immigration and both the responsibilities for it, but also immigrants are assets, right? They can be entrepreneurs, they can bring skills that small communities can't keep, doctors, and so on. So what's interesting is that there aren't the services necessarily in place to support that idea, and yet it's a very popular one.
What is the net effect of all this on immigrants coming to BC?
Well, I think it's pretty tragic. I think what you're doing is you're wasting people's existing resources, their existing skills, their talents, and you're also wasting time. You're wasting their time. I don't understand the logic in the short term, because BC does not stand to gain. It may be a way of balancing the books for the province in the short term, but in the long term, you're going to have higher unemployment. You're going to have more disillusioned people who may, if they can afford to, leave the province. But essentially, it's a waste of human talent. And we have very high standards when we select immigrants to come to this country. And to short shrift them and to short shrift Canada, the reason we choose them, of course, is so that Canada too benefits. It simply defeats the purpose of immigration.
What are the consequences for the province as a whole if we continue to do this, if we continue to give people coming here short shrift?
Well, I think the first one is that word gets around. People will stop coming here. We're already seeing over the last, I would say, 5 to 8 years, fewer refugees for sure coming to British Columbia. Refugees on average tend to need more language skills and more settlement services because they come under circumstances not of their own making. So I think that will continue. I think places like Montreal and Toronto will pick up the slack there and also get the settlement dollars for those kinds of services. So I think we may continue to get some of the people who'd like to retire here, or the people who are asset rich who want to come as business investors. That program is not that big anymore, but we'll get those people. But I don't think we will necessarily get the most highly skilled. I don't necessarily think we'll get people who have sort of the creative and or kind of entrepreneurial juices to make BC a better place.
Some people, I think, believe that immigrants are a drain on the economy, and that if BC is getting fewer immigrants, BC will be better off. What would your reaction be to people who think like that?
Well, it's a very interesting and compelling thesis, and certainly politics and research are never divorced, but there are a number of studies, one of them recently out of SFU, Don DeVoorts, looked at the services that new immigrants draw upon and their cost to the system relative to their tax contributions to the, welfare state, as it were, and that the contributions exceeded the costs considerably. And he outlines this, and certainly there are, it's online, a person could Google it, it's called Metropolis in Vancouver, Don DeVoorts. But the main point is that you're going to find people who might, question those numbers. But when you get right down to it, do the math, look at the data. I think it's fairly unequivocal that on average immigrants arrive here and they don't draw on the system, the health system especially, nearly the extent the Canadians do.
Jennifer Heinemann teaches in the Department of Geography at SFU. She was one of the lead researchers on the study, A System in Crisis. The study can be found at immigrantsandrefugees.ca. You've been listening to Red Eye, a program produced by an alternative media collective in Vancouver, Canada. Red Eye broadcasts live every Saturday morning from 9 until noon and can be heard around the world at cooperadio.org.